Thanksgiving is almost here. People always say it's their favorite holiday because they don't have to run around and buy presents and do all the decorating, all that stuff. It's just a wonderful time to be together with the people that you love. So as we know, there's a lot going on in the news. And there was a story this last week that caught my eye and for me brought up a slew of memories. And it's related, and hang in there with me because I'll let you know how this ties in, but it's related to this November holiday that celebrates Thanksgiving, setting aside time to give thanks, you know, for our many blessings. And so often we're so busy with life and we're so busy getting all this bad news in our consciousness that we don't take the time to really stop. I know my dad, you know, I have the best dad in the whole world. And he used to say, if I can get up in the morning, put my feet on the floor, it's a good day. I mean, how's that for a grateful heart? So as I say, lots of negative news out there, but is that really what we want to focus on? It's almost hard to stay away from it. Is that what we want to spend our energy on? You know, getting all that good creative energy focused somewhere where we don't want it. The story that caught my eye was about moving the Statue of Liberty's torch. Did any of you see any of that? The original torch, they were moving it to its new home, which is a museum dedicated to Lady Liberty. And don't worry, if you go out and you look, the statue still does have the torch because the original was removed and replaced back in 1984 when they started doing the rehabilitation of the Statue of Liberty. And they replaced it with a replica and then they stored the original torch. And so back in 1984, if you remember, the restoration of Lady Liberty started because it was in dire need. And they wanted it to be completed by 1986 so they could celebrate the centennial of the dedication of the original Statue of Liberty in 1886. And I was so blessed to be invited. I remember getting the call saying, do you want to be with us on a ferry in the harbor in front of the Statue of Liberty when they rededicate it? I was like, yes! I didn't even let them finish getting the words out of their mouth. But they were doing, obviously, a lot of festivities in and around the statue, Ellis Island, and in New York. And I remember being on that ferry, sitting there watching it, because, again, it was all darkness. You could hear the voices, and they were rededicating the statue. And then on came the lights, and on went the fireworks. And I thought, this is really incredibly awesome, absolutely spectacular. And as part of that trip, because I had never been to the Statue of Liberty, I've been to New York on business, but I'd never been to the Statue of Liberty. And in addition to doing that, I was determined to visit Ellis Island. That was a place where over 12 million immigrants came into this country between kind of the end of the last century and about the mid-50s. And they came into that port and were either allowed into this country or were rejected and sent back home. All of my grandparents on both sides came to America through Ellis Island. And that main building, in conjunction with repair of the Statue of Liberty, was also put together, and they put together a museum for Ellis Island. And it was filled with letters from people whose parents and grandparents had come to this country. There were pictures, there were stories, there were mementos, there were displays of the history, and you saw pictures of the thousands and thousands of people sitting in the chairs waiting to go in to be examined to find out whether they were acceptable or not. And there were stories about the process that they had to go through in order to get in this country. Stories about the conditions. Obviously, different people had different experiences. There was first class and then there was steerage. Different experiences. The conditions at Ellis Island were, I mean, there was no air conditioning. Most of the people wore all their clothes know, they didn't have that much. And then, of course, there were the attitudes in this country about all these hordes, millions of immigrants coming to this country. And as I wandered around, I mean, if you ever get the chance, if you haven't been to Ellis Island, whether you had family come through there and whether you've ever been to the Statue of Liberty, it's a trip that is well worth the effort on your part. And I'm wandering around through this museum, and as you come into the museum, there's a display of about 100 different types of suitcases and chests and moving trunks and stuff as a representation. And these were things that had all been donated from people. They didn't go out and buy this stuff. This was stuff that people had very generously and lovingly donated. And so you come into this museum, and here's this huge pile of luggage. And I'm reading the stories going from one area to another, one room to another, and I'm looking at the pictures of the people. And you know how people looked back then around the turn of the century? You know, the pictures were so somber, you know. And I was marveling at the valuables. And again, as I say, all of this stuff was donated by families because they wanted not only to memorialize their relatives, but they wanted to be part of telling the story of Ellis Island and what this was all about. And I remember one of the displays was pretty fancy. It was a chest, you know, with leather straps, and they showed some table linens and china that this individual had brought over. Another display, they had the family Bible that this individual had brought, and it had the family tree, because that's how people used to keep records when someone was born or someone died or they married. All of that was written in the Bible. And with that Bible was a journal or a diary that the individual had kept on his efforts coming to this country. And another one, and I just, as I say, some were real mind stickers. There was a lovely pocket watch that this individual carried to this country when he came. And, you know, if you're familiar with pocket watches, you know, they have a chain that goes in a buttonhole, so obviously you don't lose the watch. But on this particular pocket watch, the chain, there was no chain. The chain that it would attach it was a braiding. And the letter that accompanied this little display explained that this was woven of human hair. It sounds a little weird, but this is a really big thing around the turn of the century. And this letter was explaining that the hair was this individual's, this son's mother's hair. And she wove it so that he could wear it with his watch, so that she could send her love and blessings along with him on this journey, and that he would carry that around with him as he went through his adventures in this new country, and she would be with him always. And there were, you know, as I say, lots of displays, some exciting, some interesting, some heartfelt. And as I was wandering from room to room, I remember thinking two things. One, how little most people had back then. If you've ever been in an old home, you see the size of their closets, you know. And the second thing was, what would I take if I could only take a suitcase to those people who just went through the fires in California? You know, that idea of what did they grab that was valuable to them. And as I had mentioned, there were different types of passage to this country. There was first class, the wealthy. They could take as much luggage as they wanted. It was not a problem. But those in steerage were allowed a suitcase or just something they could carry. And that was it. You know, we have so much. Many times we complain a lot. And, you know, I think about this display at Ellis Island and how little people had when they came here. Our biggest desire is to have a walk-in closet for more room for our clothes and our shoes and all the stuff we have. You know, our garages are filled. We have to walk in sideways to get in the car. You know, And then when we fill that up, then we get storage lockers. So back to my trip to Ellis Island. All those amazing and interesting and thoughtful, heartfelt, poignant gifts that people donated to this permanent display so the rest of us could experience what it was like for different individuals to come here. And there was one display I'll never forget, and it really wasn't a display. I walked into this room with more history and pedestals and up on the wall and other artifacts and memorabilia. And I remember as clear, because it so impressed me, I walked into this room and I'm looking at all of this history. And to my right, there was a doorway that went into the next room. And it was just a little picture, black and white picture, and a supporting letter on that wall. Very simple, you know, you would have just walked right by it. But you know me, inquiring minds want to know. So it's kind of like, how come that's there? And I walked over there, and it was a black and white picture of a couple, man and a woman. And the man was holding a suitcase, and his wife was here. And the letter went on to explain that picture was taken just after they had left Ellis Island, so they knew this was their new home. And they were starting on their experience here in New York, in this new country. And typical of pictures taken back then, you know, it was a little, the people were a little stiff because you had to hold still for a while, and it was a little fuzzy, a little out of focus. But what grabbed my attention and what grabbed my heart was the accompanying letter from the couple's family, and they were introducing their parents to the world and telling their story. And the story was that this was a couple that was fairly newly married, and they were terribly poor, which was not unusual. I mean, this was a country, they'd come from a country that, you know, the war had devastated the country, and things were very grim. And this couple had saved every penny they possibly could just to pay for the ticket to come to the United States, the land of opportunity. And they were so poor that when it was time to leave, they had to borrow a suitcase from a relative because they didn't even own a suitcase. So they borrowed this suitcase. They paid for their passage. They get on the ship. And it was important for them to have a suitcase, so they didn't want people around them to know how poor they were, because not only did they have to borrow the suitcase, they were so poor they had nothing to put in the suitcase. And so here's this couple with this empty suitcase. I think of the hardships and the sacrifices that my grandparents underwent. And I'm so grateful for their courage and their tenacity and their toughness. My parents are first generation Americans, and I stand here today the benefactor of those grandparents and parents. This is a wonderful time of year because it reminds us of our blessings. Why is gratitude or giving thanks so important for all of us, not just around this time, but for all time? When you think about it, it's a basic principle of new thought. It's that basic principle of the law of mind action, basic principle of the creative power of our minds. Thoughts held in mind produce after their kind. What you think about you become. That becomes your reality. What you surround yourself with multiplies. Dwelling in gratitude and blessing produces more blessings, therefore more gratitude, therefore more blessings. It's a multiplier effect. You can't lose. When you focus on the goodness in life, you create more of it in your life. Stands to reason, wouldn't you want to dwell in a consciousness of gratitude and blessings as often as possible, whenever possible? Gratitude for the big things, every morning, every sunrise, every sunset, the snow, the rain, the gift of sight, to see beauty. You know me, I believe beauty is an aspect of God. The gift of hearing, to be transported and inspired. The gift of a smile, a small courtesy that lifts your day, no matter where you are or the mood you're in. The gift of love, received and also to be able to give love. One of the most powerful things we can do in this world that likes to say, "Aw, ain't that awful," whenever possible. One of the most powerful things we can do is do a gratitude / blessing journal, to write down things every day of things that are blessings or things we're grateful for. It's a great exercise every day. It's a reminder, and it's really a great thing to have because life gets hard. And how neat to be able to pull out that journal and go back and remember the people and places and times and experiences that were blessings in our life that made us more. I often think of that couple with the empty suitcase starting their life together. And I'm so grateful for those grandparents who stuck it out and did what they had to do, because it wasn't easy. And so I was thinking, there's so many aspects and so many things that we could be grateful for. And I'm grateful for my parents, who were so dedicated to family, that made the sacrifices to give me amazing experiences and opportunities. People will say, "Well, you had perfect parents." No, I didn't. I don't even know what a perfect parent looks like. But they loved and were dedicated to us. I'm grateful as a woman to be born in this country. Think about it. To be born at a time when women were given their rights. It hasn't been that long. I remember I tell the story of, I was working, I had a degree, I was earning a good living, I wanted to buy a house, and the bank wouldn't give me a loan. My dad had to co-sign my mortgage because I was a woman. You know how untrustworthy women are. I'm grateful I had a dad who truly believed I could do anything and supported my endeavors. I'm grateful I went to a school that did tracking. Now, I know this is not a popular concept in these days, but we tracked, and I got great teachers, and I had wonderful classes that pushed me. Well, you know what I'm really grateful for? That I came of age during the time of Russia's Sputnik, when they put that satellite up in orbit in the 50s, and science became emphasized because I loved how things worked. I loved science. I'm grateful for the academic scholarships I had and the prestigious NIH National Institutes of Health fellowships I had. And I know, because I was a woman, I had an edge, because there weren't a lot of women in science. Yeah, I was smart. Yeah, I had good grades. But it was a time when they were encouraging women in the sciences. So much to be thankful for. big things, little things, things I didn't even do that people did before me, around me. I'm grateful to be here. Through the direction and serendipity of spirit, I love to tell the story. Tony will back me up because he was on the board at the time. Your present minister stepped down, and the board knew she was going to step down. And Sunday was coming up, and they didn't have a speaker. And I had been a co-minister at another church, and it was a glorious ministry, but I was a little burned out after several years. And I took some time off for a sabbatical, and I remember thinking, I'm going to take about 3 months off from ministry, because I was really burned out. And as I got into my sabbatical, I thought, well, maybe I'll take 6 months. 6 months sounds good, you know. So I'm kind of making plans for where I'm going to go, how I'm going to travel, what I'm going to do. And about 2 months later, it was in March, I'm in my prayer time that morning. And out of the blue, I get this thought, I'm missing ministry. And I was like, what? What the heck? I'm planning to take 6 months off. I'm missing ministry? No, I'm not. And I kid you not, I get a call at 1 o'clock that afternoon, and it's Tony. And he said, what are you doing this Sunday? Because there were other ministers in the area who knew I was not connected with a church. And he basically said, he sounded a little panicked. And he said, what are you doing this Sunday? And I said, are you driving? And he said, yeah. I said, pull over. Because I thought, you know, this guy's going to crash. And so he kind of told me the story. And I said, okay, I'll, you know, calm down. I'll be there. What's the time, the whole thing. And so I came here to do that Sunday. And out of that then evolved me being here as full-time minister the following year. Interesting if you just leave yourself open and receptive to what Spirit wants you to do. You are a truly amazing group of people. I mean, you know that. Maybe I don't tell you that enough. You're part of this amazing spiritual family, and I'm grateful. I'm so grateful for the love and the support that I get here. I can't think of a time in the 13 plus years I've been here where you haven't been there for me, or you haven't backed up of some next goofy idea I came up with or some vision. I am blessed in so many ways, and I'm blessed to have you in my life, and I am truly grateful.